Today, Blowback City. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the Property Imperative Weekly to the 3rd of November 2018, our digest of the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The latest data reinforces the downward momentum in property and the blowback more broadly across the economy and the finance sector. Those arguing for just a small adjustment before a spring bounce back are sadly plain wrong. In fact, the falls are likely to accelerate from here. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program where you can support our ability to make great content. Here is the link, and it's in the comments below. The first piece of data relates to the number of properties listed for sale. It's rising very fast, a point made in our recent post with property insider Edwin Almeida. More from the property market front line, what's up with auctions? The latest data shows that sales listings are surging in the Sydney region, with 27,265 showing on domain, and even more if you include hidden listings. And in one day, just one day, 230 additional new listings were added. This is being driven by more property investors seeking to exit, either because of the extra costs of switching from an interest-only mortgage to a principal and interest mortgage, or simply to crystallise gains before they dissipate. And this is consistent with our survey data on transaction intentions, which also shows that the number of prospective purchasers is falling. And you can watch our post, Decoding Property Buying Intentions, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, where we discuss the results in more detail. The auction results last week, which were delayed from some sources at least, showed lower results, many withdrawn properties, and more properties where the final sale price was not disclosed, all signs of a distressed market. CoreLogic says that there were 2,928 capital city homes taken to auction last week, making it the fifth busiest week for auctions so far this year, but more than half of the homes taken to auction failed to sell, giving a final clearance rate of 47%, the fifth consecutive week where the combined capital cities have seen less than 50% of homes sold. Last year, there were 3,713 homes taken to auction over the same week, when a much higher 64.5% sold. Melbourne's final auctions clearance rate came in higher week on week. The improved clearance rate last week was across the second highest volume of auctions seen across the city this year. There were 1,709 auctions held and returning a clearance rate of 48.6%, having increased on the 45.7% over the week prior, when 1,087 auctions were held. In Sydney, 798 auctions took place last week, with 45.3% successful, up from the 44.6% over the week prior, when fewer auctions were held, 675 in fact. Although the clearance rate was higher over the week, it remained much lower than the 58.3% of homes successful at auction over the same week last year, when a significantly higher 1,215 auctions took place. And across the smaller auction markets, Adelaide was the best performing in terms of clearance rates, with 57.6% of homes selling at auctions last week, although this was lower than the previous week. Now, this week, there are fewer auctions scheduled to take place across the combined capital cities, with 1,438 currently being tracked by CoreLogic, which is half the volume of auctions recorded last week, when, of course, there were 2,928 homes taken to auction. Across Melbourne, the number of auctions to be held is expected to fall this week, with only 234 Melbourne homes scheduled to go to auction. The lower volumes are likely due to the upcoming Melbourne Cup festivities and coming off the back of the second busiest week for auctions this year. Activity across Sydney is set to remain relatively steady week on week, with 764 homes scheduled for auction this week, decreasing by 4.3% on last week's final figures, where 798 auctions were held across the city. And across the smaller auction markets, activity across Adelaide and Brisbane is virtually unchanged week on week, while Canberra, Perth, and Tasmania are all expected to see a higher volume of auctions this week. The most recent price results for October from CoreLogic takes the annual decline across the national index to 3.5%, signaling the weakest macro housing market conditions since February 2012, with the hedonic home value index reporting a 0.5% fall in dwelling values nationally in October. And on a rolling quarterly basis, dwelling values are now trending lower across both the combined capital city regions, down 1.6%, as well as the combined regional areas of Australia, down 0.7%. The weakest conditions continue to be felt across Australia's two largest cities, where investment buyers have been most concentrated. Supply additions have been highest, and where housing affordability is the most stretched. Sydney values are down 7.4% over the past 12 months, and Melbourne values are 4.7% lower over the same period. Values also declined in Perth and Darwin. However, the downturn in these two cities have been ongoing since mid-2014, with values falling 3.3% and 2.9% respectively over the past 12 months. Although dwelling values are rising on an annual basis across the remaining cities, the pace of growth has eased. Of course, the averages do not tell the true story. There are places where prices have fallen more than 22% in the past year, and CoreLogic revised their index a little, but the trends are clearly down. The funniest thing I saw this week were the property spruikers trying to argue that the rate of fall was slowing. That is just not true. Also, it's worth noting that the higher end of the market continues to fall farther and faster, and the disparity of performance between the upper and lower quartiles is clear at lower geographic aggregations as well. In Melbourne, the top 25% of the market by value has seen values fall almost 9% over the past 12 months, a slightly weaker performance than Sydney's upper quartile market, where values are down by 8.6%. At the same time, more affordable housing markets have seen a 2.9% rise in values across Melbourne over the past year, while Sydney's lower quartile has recorded a fall that is almost half that of the upper quartile. Finally, on property, economist John Adams and I debunked Nine's The Block in our post Adams North Block Mania Will Literally Kill Innocent Australians. We looked at why people cannot see the upcoming property correction, and we got deep and dirty into philosophy, TV villains, cash for comment, and the KGB. What could possibly go wrong? We had full year results from NAB and ANZ this past week. In NAB's case, cash earnings were down 14%. They included restructuring costs of $530 million and customer related remediation of $261 million, leading to a cash earnings figure before these of $6,493 million, down 2.2% on the financial year 17. Their net interest margin fell 4 basis points from 1.88% in 2017 to 1.84% in 2018. This included 2 basis point falls in lending margin and liquidity funding, plus 2 basis points from markets, but offset by clawing back margin from depositors of 2 basis points. NAB was down 0.55% on Friday to 25.21. ANZ cash profit on a continuing basis was $6.49 billion, down 5% or flat on a statutory profit basis. Their approach to simplify the business and reduce costs have bolstered their capital position, but also left them potentially more exposed to a mortgage and construction sector downturn. They included charges of $377 million after tax for refunds to customers and related remediation costs, plus accelerated amortization expenses of $206 million, predominantly relating to its international business, and a restructuring charge of $104 million, largely relating to the previously announced move of the Australia and technology divisions to agile ways of working. Their margin was significantly lower, thanks to the change in the business mix, funding, and customer remediation charges. Shane Elliott, their CEO, said he expected mortgage credit growth would probably halve to 2 to 3% in the coming year, and that credit growth from investor borrowers has already, quote, ground to a halt. I wouldn't be surprised, he said, if the house price correction had further to run. And he also made the point ANZ is still using HEM, household expenditure measures, for some mortgage lending, but that borrowing power was reduced. The average household on income of $110,000 3 years ago could have borrowed around $550,000 for a mortgage, he said. But that same family today with exactly the same income, $110,000, could only borrow about $440,000. ANZ was down 1.24% on Friday to $25.53. And Westpac, which reports next week, also advised the market on Friday it had upped its provisions for customer payments by $46 million to $281 million, and its exit of infrastructure funds management business Hastings Funds Management with also a negative impact. More putting out the trash. It ended at $26.50 on Friday, down 0.64%. They are all being hit by the slowing mortgage sector, one-off costs for customer remediation, and business restructuring. Selling off businesses may generate additional capital, but it also puts more reliance on the fading property sector. CBA was also down on Friday, dropping 0.86% to 68.25. And remember, the Royal Commission is still running. In contrast, Macquarie, who reported their first half 19 results this week, rose 3.86% on Friday to 22.42. They announced a net profit after tax of $1.3 billion for the first half, ended the 30th September 2018, up 5% on the half year, ended the 30th September 2017. The bank continues a strong run, benefiting from its international business portfolio. International income accounted for 67% of the group's total income. The capital markets business performed strongly, and their Australian mortgage portfolio was $36.1 billion, and it increased 10% on the 31st of March 2018, representing approximately 2% of the Australian mortgage market. Their shares rose on the results, with analysts revising up future earnings. And we got data from lenders mortgage insurer Genworth. Their third quarter 18 earnings reported a statutory net profit after tax of $19.6 million and an underlying net profit after tax of $20.4 million for the third quarter. It is an important bellwether for the mortgage industry and confirms recent softening. Whilst they have a strong capital position, their net investment returns were also down a little. They said that the delinquency rate increased from 0.5% in the third quarter 17 to 0.55% in the third quarter of 2018. And this was driven by two factors. Firstly, there was a decrease in policies in force, and second was the increase in delinquency rates year on year across all states, and in particular Western Australia, New South Wales, and to a lesser extent South Australia. In terms of the numbers of delinquencies, Western Australia and New South Wales experienced the largest increase, with Queensland and Victoria experiencing a decrease in the number of delinquencies. Their shares were up 1.34% on Friday to 2.27, still near recent lows. The latest credit aggregates from the RBA to September 2018 continues to show an easing of credit growth. Total credit across all categories rose seasonally adjusted by $14.41 billion, or 0.5%, to $2.8 trillion. Within that, owner-occupied lending rose 0.5%, or $5.5 billion, to $1.19 trillion, while investment lending rose 0.1%, or $0.52 billion, to $593 billion. Other personal lending was flat, and business lending rose 0.9% to $943 billion, up $8.4 billion. The 12-month ended data shows how investor lending continues to slow. Owner-occupied lending growth is easing, and overall lending for housing growth is slowing to an annualized 5.2%. This is a problem for the banks in that to maintain profitability as assets grow, they need the rate of growth of housing loans to rise, not slow down. And even at these levels, with some growth, household debt will rise relative to loans. So again, it highlights the fundamental problem we have in the system at the moment. Lending in the less regulated non-bank sector still appears to be growing more strongly than ADI lending. And APRA released their monthly banking statistics for September 2018. This includes the total balances by ADI, broken by investor and owner-occupied lending. Total lending grew 0.21% in the month to a total of $1.65 trillion, or 2.5% annualized. Within that, lending for own occupation rose by 0.36% to $1.09 trillion, and investor loans fell 0.03% to $557.4 billion. Investment loans now comprise 33.72% of the portfolio and continues to slide. Looking at the individual major players, we see that only NAB grew their investment loan portfolio in the month. Among the big four, Macquarie and Bendigo are lifting investor loans the most by value. ANZ dropped their balances the most. And in other news, the CPI data was weak thanks to some one-offs below the RBA target for inflation, and the retail turnover for September was also pretty low. The ABS released their latest statistics to September 2018. Households remain under pressure, judging by the weak results. In trend terms, overall retail turnover grew just 0.2% in the month. Within the segments, other retailing rose 0.6%, cafes, restaurants and takeaway foods rose 0.5%, food retailing 0.2%, clothing, footwear and personal services were flat, while household goods fell 0.2% and department stores fell 0.1%. Across the states, Tasmania rose 0.5%, Queensland and Victoria both rose 0.3%, New South Wales rose 0.2%, along with South Australia, ACT was flat, Western Australia fell 0.1% and the Northern Territories fell 0.9%. Online retail turnover contributed 5.6% of total retail turnover in original terms in September, an unchanged result from August 2018, but in September 2017, online retail turnover was 4.4%. The ASX 100 was up 0.13% on Friday to 4,817, while the ASX Financials 200 was down 0.38% to 5,748. The Aussie recovered a little against the US dollar during the week, but ended down 0.18% to 71.93. Given the prospect of the RBA cutting rather than lifting rates, we expected to go lower. Hexavest, a $14.5 billion fund, said Australia's dollar may drop to a nine-year low of 67 US cents as the central bank is set to become even more dovish and lean more forward to cutting interest rates. A number of other major central banks are trying to catch up with the Fed. If the RBA is not playing that same game, it's bad news near term, and so you get a weaker currency. AMP is still languishing as they try to explain the sale of chunks of the business to the market. It ended at 2.69, up 1.89% on Friday. The problem is the business is impossible to value at the moment, given the Royal Commission, remediation and management changes. Perhaps somebody will make a cheeky bid eventually. The gold spot Aussie dollar was up 0.11% to 1,713, and the Aussie Bitcoin was up 0.34% to 8,758. Market volatility in Australia is still extended, with the local VIX ending the week at 1586, down 4.4%. And volatility also continues in overseas markets, with the US VIX still elevated at 19.51 and up 0.88% on Friday. The US labour data released on Friday provided another reason to confirm the Fed will continue to hike rates. The unemployment rate was steady at 3.7%, with an additional 250,000 jobs added. And over the year, average hourly earnings have increased by 83 cents or 3.1%. The benchmark United States 10-year yield traded around 3.22, while the United States 2-year climbed to 2.92, its highest level in a decade. The 3-month rate, though, slid just a little to 2.33. And you can watch our post. Interest rates will rise. Wall Street closed lower on Friday as uncertainty on trade dominated direction after President Donald Trump's upbeat comments on the US-China trade relations appeared to contradict earlier comments from his chief economic advisor. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.43% to 25,271. The S&P 100 fell 0.74% to 1,211, while the NASDAQ Composite fell 1.04% to 7,357. The S&P 500 Financials Index was flat on Friday, having recovered during the week to stand at 438. Beyond trade, tech stocks wreaked havoc on the broader market, led by a slump in shares of Apple, which fell 6.63% after its above forecast earnings and revenue was overshadowed by soft guidance and weaker than expected iPhone shipments in the last quarter, and it ended at 207.48. The S&P 500 technology sector fell around 2%. Gold was down on Friday by 0.11% to 1,235, but was higher across the week, reflecting the risk-on sentiment across the market. Crude oil fell 1.3% to 62.87 as the Trump administration seems to be achieving its trifold agenda of pushing Iran while balancing the world's energy needs and keeping oil prices low. Crude markets posted their largest weekly loss since February. And Bitcoin was down a little at 6,426, which was down 0.38% and is still going sideways. According to Augustin Custes, the general manager of the Bank for International Settlements, the BIS, the organization of more than 60 central banks from around the world, digital currencies are not real money, but are an asset with an aesthetic importance to cryptographic connoisseurs. Custes made these remarks on Thursday during the Finance and Global Economics Forum in Miami. He presented his Money and Payment Systems in the Digital Age report, with virtual coin part of it, dubbed Cryptocurrencies Fake Money. No discussion of money and payments in the digital age would be complete without addressing cryptocurrencies, but are cryptocurrencies money, he says? No. The use of currencies is misleading. So, all in all, locally the property news continues negative, and globally the US rate hikes are set to create further pain across the markets. Blowback City in more ways than one. And now a reminder, on the 20th of November at 8 p.m. Sydney time, we'll run our next live stream event. Here are the details. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program where you can support our ability to make great content. The link is in the comments below. And as always, if you like what you've seen here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. I read them all. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now by hitting the subscribe bell. And if you've already subscribed, many thanks. I really appreciate your support and participation. I'm Martin North, the principal analyst of Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.